Der SSMP Rallye Talk mit Chris. Load your roadbooks und ab geht's.
Yes, so hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of a Rallye Talk. So as you will see, I'm talking in English. I hope you will get it and my English is not so worse, but I'm here with a special guest from South Africa, Willem. Willem, nice to have you here. It's really a pleasure that you take your time and to visit us in our little podcast here.
Yeah, Chris, guten Tag. nice to chat with you guys. I wish I could speak in German, but thank you. Thank you for having me and thank you for making this platform available for us to chat. And yeah, thanks for having me on. It's really nice to be with you guys.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. So, and I think this would be a really interesting podcast for everyone who maybe has the dream to do a rally or maybe wants to go riding in another country and experience something new. But before we talk about that, Willem, just let the guys out there know who you are, what are you doing, and yeah, then maybe we talk a little bit how you get into bikes and into the rally stuff.
Cool, man. Yeah. So my name is Willem Avenant. I am a rally racer and a road bookmaker. I've fallen in love with rally racing because of Dakar. I used to watch it with my dad, and I've always, my whole life, wanted to one day race in Dakar. And my life has shaped up that, you know, it's become my absolute passion, you know. It basically is what consumes me, is rally racing. And anything to do with rally racing, we are involved in. You know, I do development of electronic tablets or digital roadbooks. And then, like I said, we build roadbooks for events, which is a really, really nice job. And then I also race myself for the experience, not so much as for the podium. And then I also have a grown-up job as a tree doctor or an arborist. And that's basically it. That's what keeps me busy every day.
That sounds really, really amazing. And I think the passion for rally racing, that's a big point what we both share. Even sadly, I haven't done a rally so far, only events which are close to rally, but I totally feel the passion and yeah, I really want to make it happen and go for it.
You're definitely gonna have to come over to South Africa next year and we'll make it happen, man. It's
for sure. So you watched Dakar with your dad, and this was even also the starting point for you to jump on a motorbike and motorcycle and start riding, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I grew up in a very, very small town. I actually still own a house there and spend a lot of time there. It's called, it's an area of South Africa called the Karoo. And it's a very semi-desert, dry, arid area with lots of riding. And I grew up riding a 50cc Honda Express moped or whatever you guys would call it, little scooter. You know, that automatic three gears. And, you know, we absolutely, it was a little two-stroke, and a friend of mine had one as well. And we just, I mean, it was the epitome of freedom, you know, for a boy of 4, 5, 6 years old to be able to get on a motorbike. And then, you know, we had so much adventures on those things, you know, because it just, you could pack a backpack and just disappear for a day or two. And we rode those things, man. We abused them. So to me, that was my introduction to motorcycling. And also, I people joke with me about my love of KTMs, but, you know, any bike I love. And in this case, you know, Honda had proven to me there that they cannot be broken. You know, we didn't know about maintenance. We didn't know about two-stroke mixing. We didn't know about anything. We just started them and rode them, and they just always started. So yeah, we did that, and then I kind of graduated through the ranks, saved up money. You know, I had a lot of jobs when I was young in order to buy bikes. You know, that was it. That was made money because I wanted to buy bikes. And I had the whole range. I had the IT Yamaha IT 175, which was an absolute beast of a bike. It still had six gears, which, I mean, for a two stroke back then, to have six gears was nuts. It was amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
So we had that, and then Honda XL 250. And it was the typical thing of boys where you buy a bike and you sell it, and then you buy a better one, and then you buy a better one. And yeah, eventually I think I was able to buy a what we call the gray import, because at that point in South Africa, KTM wasn't officially importing bikes into South Africa. So I eventually bought a KTM 250 EXC. And that was just, it was my first exposure to a real race bike, you know, and the thing almost killed me, but it was absolutely amazing. Yeah, so then things kind of, life happened. I grew up, still rode bikes. Eventually I ended up having this dream of traveling through Africa on a Africa Twin, the old, the 750.
I have one in my garage. That's my adventure bike. 95 Africa Twin 750. I still love it, and I think I will keep it forever, even if I don't ride it anymore and it gets its little space in the garage or wherever. That's a cool bike.
100%. I still have mine. I will never sell it. You know, the thing starts first try. They had a bit of an issue with their fuel pumps around 50,000 Ks, but if you sort that out, nothing is wrong with that bike. So yeah, I bought that bike thinking I was going to travel through Africa with it. I met my wife at the time, my girlfriend, and we ended up doing the trip, but in a Land Rover, an old Series 3 Land Rover, and not on a motorcycle. And then
I mean a cool Land Rover isn't a bad option anyway, so
it's still not a bike, but it was it was more, way more challenging than a bike, I can tell you that. it was a 1979 Series 3 Land Rover. It's not, I can't believe we did it, like now thinking back on it, it was crazy, but we did it.
The Honda would be more reliable, I think.
And more comfortable. But so I still have the Honda, and then ended up back in Cape Town. And you know, as life happens, Wanda, it's just like, you know, we all have these dreams. I mean, obviously over the years I've always followed Dakar and I've always followed rally, but my life reached a point where it's like, look, we all have dreams, we all want to do it, but if we don't actually act on them, it'll never happen. And then I decided, come high or hell water, I'm going to buy a rally bike. Obviously not an RFR. I didn't have the ability to buy an RFR, or still don't. And then from there, go and do a rally, you know. And it was a situation where I forced myself to do it. I'm very happy about it today, because the rally family, the rally fraternity, is a special group of people. And even if you don't ride, even if you just hang out in the bivouac or help on the team, it's the best people you will ever meet in your life. And my love for the sport have developed, or have evolved from the love for motorbikes, which I still love. I love riding them, but the real beauty of the sport is the people and the friends you make, the bonds you build, the memories you make. Because you know, every rally I explain it as a bit of it's a, like an emotional trauma almost. You know, you go through so much pain and suffering, and it's that trauma that bounds you together. It's a shared experience. You know, you can tell somebody about a race, but you'll always see that the guys that was at the race together, those guys have a bond for life, because they understand what it is they went through. And that's what makes rally such a special sport, and also so different from any other motorsport. And that's rally on motorbikes. You know, the guys in the cars, they've got a roll cage, they've got aircon, they've got nice intercoms. Rally on a motorbike is just pure exposure. You know, it's just crazy.
I think that's a really, really good point. And for me, who obviously hasn't done any rally so far, but I also experienced so much of this awesome people, of this kindness and of this bonding you mentioned, even to start talking about rally, getting in touch. I mean, we are sitting here and doing this podcast and talking, and we never have met in person before. Mm-hmm. So it's just only because kind of we share the same passion.
Exactly.
And like this things, I don't know if it's Garrett from Myra or Joey Evans, or I've got in touch with so many great people, and they were all open-minded, open-hearted, and it was really, really cool. And I think that's also a big point, what you mean, it's pure exposure, and the exposure is for every rider on a motorbike the same. If you're a factory rider from KTM, like Toby Price, Matthias Wagner, whatever, you're exposed to the same roughness, the same challenges than any other guy in the field. Maybe you for sure, you got the better treatment and you got tons of mechanics and stuff like that and perfect prep bikes and so on. But when you're out there, you're in the same conditions on a bike on your own at first.
It's the great equalizer. And you know, it's something that there was a specific rally that I went through so much difficulties and problems, and you know, I had thought that inside, I mean, I wouldn't say that I felt that I was the only one, but I kind of did, you know, until like afterwards, you know, months, weeks afterwards, and you hear about all the stories about all the things that people were dealing with in the race. And then you realize that, you know, everybody has a fight for survival at a rally, whether it's for the top spot or the bottom spot, but it becomes a fight for survival and for making the start line every day. And that you might feel at the moment that you're the only one, but that equalizing force makes it that we all on some level are fighting for survival. You know, it for one guy it might be a motorcycle issue, for another guy it might be a roadbook issue, or for another guy it might be an emotional issue. But everybody, there's nobody that sits back and say this is easy. You know, they're all fighting for survival on their own different levels.
Yeah, and I think I also heard a lot of people talking about something which is maybe kind of getting lost more and more in lots of other sports, sadly, is the sportsmanship. So yeah, you are a racer if you do rally, and you want to get the best position you can get with your abilities and your material and so on. But in rally, I think everybody stops to help another person when he crashed or when there's a problem and you're in the bivouac and repairing and sharing tools and working together. And I mean, if you got a little bit in touch with Dakar and rally, there are so many stories, really crazy stories, where they riders motivate each other to keep pushing, make it to the finish line, and doing one step after the other. And I think that's kind of unique in this sport. So yeah, there is competition, but there's lots of camaraderie and respect for everyone else. And I would love to see this in other sports on the level like it is in rally sports.
Mm-hmm. Totally, I fully agree with you. And I think that beauty of seeing people work together, and it's almost like it's a combined happiness and a combined sadness. You know, I just came back from the Krono rally, and we had a guy there whose bike was giving problems, and he really, really wanted to carry on going. And you know, he was in Malamoto, and you know, he pulled his entire bike apart, and he didn't have a lot of mechanical knowledge, you know, so people were telling him what to do, and he's like, but you know, I've never opened an engine in my life, or I haven't done this, or I haven't done that. And people's like, don't worry, you know, and they guided him through the process. And it was a long night, and in the end of a lot of things happened, but the fact of the matter is the next morning he was on the start line.
Amazing.
By hook or by crook, it was done. And that is the beauty. And the, everybody there was happy to see him there. You know, they wanted to see him at the start of the stage. That to me is, it's a thing of beauty. And totally, as you say, it's something that in today's world is getting lost very quickly. It's all about me, myself, and I. So,
yeah. Oh, that's really cool. So, do you think that if you're doing rally and stuff like that, that this maybe not changes, but maybe it spreads your mindset for your daily life? So you have heard a lot of people talking about doing the rally, and if you know you can go through that you're challenging things what life's throwing on you a little bit in another way. Do you agree with that?
1,000%. I think, you know, just in my personal life, I used to be very a kind of person that gets stressed very easily, or not, I don't know if I'd call it stress, but worried. You know, I would think about stuff 50 times, and I would think like, is this right and this right, and very like just always worried about stuff. And the more in that regard, I've become a much more relaxed person, and I've become a much more relaxed person because of rallying, because it taught me and it teaches you that, you know, everything will be fine. You just need to take it one step at a time and like have endurance and have grit, you know. I recently did a race, and I mean, I say it all the time, I'm not a professional racer. I'm certainly not a very fast racer, but because rally is such an equalizing sport, what it does is it makes the playing field more even for people like me that's not as talented or as fast of a racer, because I have the endurance and the grit to carry on. And that is what it teaches you. So, you know, from my rally experience, I did an off-road race recently, and I was feeling a little bit annoyed with myself because I thought that I was doing very bad. It was the first race, proper race back after I broke my ankle, and I was taking it slowly, but I couldn't understand it because normally I pass a few people, and on this race I didn't pass anybody, and I was like, you know, am I that far behind in the back that I'm not passing anybody? And the race had two loops, and it was a very, very difficult race. A lot of people went in thinking that it's a off-road race, but it had enduro sections on it. I'm not an enduro rider at all, and I had a 500 bike, you know, and it was really rough. And I came in after the first loop, and I honestly did contemplate, I mean, it wasn't an option, but I did contemplate I maybe should just not do the second loop because, you know, this is not fun. It's not nice. I'm not enjoying it. But because of my rally background and because of what rally teaches you, I was like, no, that's not an option. I just have to do the second loop. So I did the second loop, and I came in, and, you know, I ended up being one of, I think, only four people that actually did both loops. Everybody else quit after the first loop. And that's why I never passed anybody. So just as an example of what, you know, that teaches you as far as rally in your normal life, perseverance is extremely important. And it's something that's not happening today anymore, in my opinion. People just give up very easily. Yeah. And then also attention to detail, you know, navigating is hard. You know, if you're tired and you don't want to navigate, but then you get lost, then you're out there much longer. So definitely it changes your personal life, in my opinion, for the better, without a doubt.
Perfect. So when you speak about the loop, I was thinking about a little experience I've got on the Transitalia Marathon last year. So I think it was the last day of riding. And I really had a bad bad sleep the night before, so I was even tired in the morning. And then we had I think it was about 230 Ks to do that day. And all on the I rode it on the Africa Twin, so on the heavy adventure bikes. Lots of travel, but the day was it wasn't so technical and wasn't, but it was more so some broken roads, so you got some tarmac, and then you got some really bump holes, and then you got gravel, and it was all really slippy, and it was lots of long straights, so you get really tired in your head because you don't have really anything to do, but then you have got the bump holes, and really it wasn't that fun to ride. And then we got close to the end. I think it was about 15 kilometers before finish. And then there was a split, and you can take the easy route where you drive on tarmac, and you're in the finish in about 5 minutes, or you can do an extra round where you have some. They told us that there was especially a guy saying, okay, you can go there and then you're home in 5 minutes, or you can take this extra loop, but this would be the hardest off-road part of the event.
Oh, wow, at
So
the
and then our brain was kind of fried. We were super tired, and the first thing that came up on our mind was, okay, we've done it so far, take it easy, we do the easy way. But then we reflected, and I was riding with a good friend of mine, so that was really cool. And but we are now here, maybe once in a lifetime.
Let's do it.
Maybe we should. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Nice, man.
And
Nice.
then we keep ripping it through, and it was really it was we had to drive up a really steep mountain, and it was all rocky and loose gravel, and with these heavy bikes, and so it was real, but we made it, and we made it without crashing, and it was
Beautiful.
such a feeling. I think I nobody understand who hasn't ever done something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Oh, I
I
get it.
was yeah I think I was crying under my helmet when I rode that finish line,
You made it, yeah.
because we made it, and we decided, no, we go this extra way, and we take the whole thing, and it was really, really cool. And yeah, that's a lesson something like this teaches you.
Totally. And I can promise you, you would never have forgiven yourself if you've taken the easy route. You would have, today, you would have regretted it.
For sure.
So definitely, that's a beautiful story, man. That is always take the road less traveled.
That's a good that's a very, very good advice. So but I think another very, very interesting good point is that you are not only a racer by heart and doing road books, you are also trying to give people a platform or an option where they can train for rally, the Karoo rally camp
Road
in
book camp,
South
yeah.
A roadbook camp, sorry, yeah, in
Yeah,
South
no worries.
Africa. So let's talk about this. What was the idea? How do you came up with it? For who is it? And yeah.
Yeah, so the Karoo Road Book Camp started off as a training camp for a bunch of us that were training for rally. And basically, it grew from there. I made road books for a bunch of friends that we were in a team together, and to practice for a rally. And the next year we were more people, and then with my passion of wanting to expose people to the sport, what I realized was that there's a big gap between racing and learning how to navigate or learning how to ride with a road book. Now, I'm sure it's the same all over the world, but to enter a rally is extremely expensive. And it's not just the cost of the rally, it's the bike prep, it's the time that you are off from work, it's the time you're away from your family. It's a very, very expensive and also very selfish sport. And I realized that if we create a scenario where people can come and experience it without having to pay all of that money, it hopefully will grow the sport because we will get more people that commit to the sport. And so what we do is we have the rally, and we call it a rally simulation. So, you know, you have a start time in the mornings, you have time cards, you have timing and tracking, we have scoring, but we just take the time aspect out of it because it's not a race. So whether you finish first or last, it doesn't matter because we don't have the infrastructure of a race. We don't have helicopters and ambulances on standby.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a group of friends that's riding together, trying to navigate and to learn. And also what it creates is all of a sudden you can stop at an intersection and ask somebody that has a ton of rally experience or that's been to Dakar, oh, but what does this mean or what does that mean? And it was to create an informal space for people to ride roadbooks together. And it's really going well. We really enjoy doing it. You know, we meet people from all over the world. And we're currently looking at expanding it. I was in Mexico this year in February 2022, helping them with their rally school. They have a rally school every year before Sonora.
I would mention Sonora Rally. I've heard about a rally school. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was very intense. It was proper dune racing. So I helped there. So that was part of the training program. So, you know, we're looking at bringing that ethos to places all over the world. We hopefully going to start a roadbook camp in Namibia in the dunes.
Yeah.
And then also in Dubai. So the Dubai one we're very excited about because it's fairly central for everybody. And, you know, we're looking at having the Dubai Roadbook Camp in October of 2023. So that people can practice for Dakar as well.
Yeah.
So from the roadbook camp side, you know, I'm not what I always tell people is that I'm not the instructor. I'm just the facilitator. I don't instruct. I don't stand there and tell you this is right, this is wrong, this is what you have to do. And mainly because, you know, I don't have that, let's call it, racing pedigree. So what we do is we create the platform and then we invite people to come and teach a class or come and ride with us or just come and socialize with us. You know, there's so much little tricks and stuff that you learn. So the key takeaway is that it's informal, you know, but we do give you formal stuff to learn, and that it's more about the experience because that's how I learn. I prefer to learn that way.
So you don't sit
in a classroom and learn. We go out on the bikes and we ride and then we talk to each other. And, you know, the moment you don't have to be scared because you're not in a race to ask questions or to stop or to look or to figure something out or to turn around. And it's just that low pressure environment that we find is very conducive. You know, we've had so many guys come on the roadbook camp and then go on to do Dakar that, you know, it's become a sense of pride for me where, again, I said to people, I certainly didn't train the people, but it's nice to be able to create a scenario where somebody comes to a camp and then moves on to Dakar and then to go and finish Dakar. So
that's a blast. That's really, really, really cool, I think. So would you recommend that if someone is interested and says, yeah, I want to travel to Karoo Roadbook Camp, you should have done some roadbook riding before, or at least you should know a little bit about the theory so that you get an idea about what to do and then experience the rest there? Or what do you think, what should be the right basics and how long are the stages you're doing?
That is a very, very interesting question. you know, I, over the times, this year, to give you an idea, this year's roadbook camp, we did not have a single finisher, meaning a person that finished and started every single special stage.
Oh.
But that was mainly because of maybe our fault where we made a lot of the specials selective. So you could say that if you don't want to do it, you can take a shortcut, very much to what you and I have spoken about just a few minutes ago. So it just so happened that there wasn't a single person that finished and started every single special. Because within the days, we have various specials. Saying that, this year was extremely difficult because of the terrain. We've had a lot of rain in where I live, and made it so that you couldn't see all the tracks, and the rivers were full of water, and now, to give you a crosscut or an idea of your question, we had people that has never ridden an off-road bike before there this year. They can ride motorcycles very well, but they haven't ridden off-road properly. So never mind navigation. And then we had Dakar finishers there as well. And the people, that guy that didn't do, hasn't really done a lot of off-road riding, you know, he had such a good time at this event. You know, he's a roadbook racer, rider now for life. But it definitely wasn't easy for him. So I would say that the way that the camp is designed is, day one is extremely easy. So day one would be, for a normal rally rider, we would classify day one as a liaison stage. It's just big, wide, open gravel roads. Now, so day one starts, and even if you've never ridden a road book, it's designed to teach you the basics of riding a road book. So it's very difficult to mess day one up. Then, you know, and we explained that to the entrance, that okay, day two is going to be a little bit tougher in the following aspects. Now, every year that changes, but this year it was navigation as well. And day one was long. I mean, all our days are, day one was, I think, say almost 400 kilometers. And then day two, and, but it's on wide, big roads, so you're going fast. Day two and day three were both around 250 kilometers, and it took people all day, literally from sunrise to sunset, to do it. But what we do is we make the specials in the day progressively harder. So if you've just completed something, and you get to the next special, you know it's going to be harder than the previous one, because that's how we explain it to you and how it's been designed. And then you can choose. You can say, well, it's 5 o'clock at night, I've got 60 k's to go, but it took me 2 hours to do the last 60 k's, which means it's going to take me more than 2 hours to do this one. So no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go to town. And because it's a training exercise, you know, there's no problem in doing that, because it's finding your limit, or not your limit, but it's finding the place where you are ranking, you know? So what I would say is that if you're a beginner, you're totally going to like day two. You're going to love it. Day one, day two might be quite challenging for you. And by day three, you're going to say, you know, you might just do a section of it. Whereas if you're a qualified rally racer, you'll have a different experience. So the whole camp is designed for different people. But it's more about your experience there, and your experience is going to be based on how much experience you have. If you've never done any roadbook riding, what we do is, before the camp, we send people all the literature they need. And again, that's putting the responsibility on you. So if you tell me, Willem, I want to come, I've never been to, never ridden a roadbook, I will give you all the tools you need. But it's up to you to use it. In theory, you should at least know how a roadbook works when you get there. If you don't, I mean, we give everybody that wants it GPX backup tracks. So, you know, you have a backup in case you do get lost. But I would say most of the people that come to this event want to learn how to ride a roadbook, so they take that literature before the time, and they go through it, and they understand the concepts of it, and the camp just becomes a place where they put the theory into practice.
Yeah, I think that's another very, very good point, which we can maybe reflect on the society all over the world, maybe in rally racing, and not even in the race, also in practice, preparation. And so you're totally responsible for whatever you do, how you use your tools, how you prep yourself, how you prep your bike. So I think you will learn, and you will do a big step in taking responsibility for your own actions and thinking what would be the next step. So, because it's all your own responsibility. And I think that's maybe something society is also losing a little bit of, and really teaches you maybe the hard way.
Mm-hmm. It forces you to learn the hard way.
But that sounds really cool and like an awesome experience. I've seen some pictures and on your Facebook, and I think also on YouTube you did some videos about the Road Book Camp, and I really love the atmosphere, you know. So like you mentioned it, some friends, some guys out there riding, and then sitting together at the evening at the bonfire, and having a nice talk about the day, reflecting the thing and learning together, and I think that that sounds great. So I mentioned it before off the mic that I really try to make it to South Africa next year and then be part of the thing.
Yes, I'll definitely do what I can from my side to help you get there. I mean, I know Gerard from Mira will be there as well. So between me and him, we'll sort something out, because it's really it that mix between socializing and riding, that's kind of, for me, a very important part. You know, this year things got a bit out of hand the one night, but a little bit too much. But that's part of it. You know, that's part of the experience. So.
But that's for the good stories and to tell when you socialize a little bit too much and combined with racing. I think these are all the great stories you will share with a smile in your eyes in a few years, so totally worth it.
And it comes back to what it's personal responsibility. You know, you need to know where your line lies.
but you have to learn your limits.
we definitely tested some limits this year. I can tell you.
That sounds really cool. And I think if anyone is interested in doing the Road Book Camp, he can, or the person can contact you wherever he comes from the edge of the world, getting in touch with you, or if you guys are having questions, you can contact me and I can put you in contact with William, or maybe answer the one or the other questions on the first level.
We're pretty much on social media as far as Facebook and Instagram. We're on Willem Avenant Racing. And if you have any questions, let us know. I mean, this year we had quite an eclectic group of people. I think we had people from America, we had people from England, we had people from Zambia, we had people from India, I think. Did I say India already? And Britain as well. So,
wow.
You know, it's a nice atmosphere for meeting people from all over the world. Lesotho, we had somebody from Lesotho. So
that's perfect. I think that's another thing I really like. So rallies is a melting pot. You see guys or people from all over the world, and they are just coming there together at one place and sharing one passion. And it doesn't matter where you're from or whatever. So
language you speak, it doesn't matter. It's like, if you speak the language of Roadbook, that's good enough.
Yeah, that's all you need. Perfect. You also developed something that makes navigating and maybe also rally racing, or at least riding road books, more available for hopefully a lot of people out there. So you developed your own let's say rally tablet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was born, I would say, twofold out of two things. Number one was that I was always struggling with my paper road book holder. It was always breaking, or I was always falling with it. And it was just always, and always on a race, you know, training, it would go great. And then if you're doing well in a race, your road book stops working. So that was the one side of it. And then the other side of it was that, you know, I looked at the sport of rally racing, and I asked myself, what is the biggest limiting factor? How can we get, what is stopping people from doing rallying? And number one thing was cost. You know, it's just too expensive. And because I want to introduce so many as possible people in my life to rally racing, I said, okay, I want to find a way for myself to make it cheaper, in line with what we do with the Road Book Camp, which is exposing people to the sport. So I say to people that the device that we've developed is, let's call it, for training purposes. It certainly is good enough to race with. I race with it. But it's not a dedicated race device. And the reason for that is because your road book and your trip meters and your caps are already dedicated racing devices. And that's what I wanted to move away from. So I wanted to develop something that is a multi-use navigation device. So it's a basic Android tablet. You know, I didn't come up with anything special. I just packaged the stuff together, where we put a lot of time and money and effort into putting in a very good screen. I have seen the screens that are being made by the roadbook, digital roadbooks that's in development at the moment, and I can categorically say our screen is better. But it is because of the cost of the tablet reflects the screen, you know, and the tablet needs to be plugged in. So, you know, we've done a lot of races recently. I mean, to give you an idea, I just need to find that quickly. But so I think if it comes to the digital roadbook debate, you know, screen brightness is the biggest thing. And definitely, you will never find a screen that is as bright or as good as paper. There's no way about it. But if you make peace with, I mean, it's like with having a car. A car has got a top speed, or a car's oil need to be changed. It's a limiting factor that you deal with. So a limiting factor on a tablet is that the screen is not as bright as a piece of paper. But that's one negative versus 20 positives, you know? So, I mean, in many ways, a digital roadbook is more redundant than I used to do a lot of rock climbing as well. So redundancy for me is very important, you know. And I was like, you know, if I compare a paper roadbook, a normal paper roadbook, one of the most common problems is the motor stops working, right? In a digital roadbook, you don't have a motor that's going to malfunction. Another big issue on all of these things is you losing power to your roadbook because somewhere there's a short. Now, you would know, I mean, you've got, 10, 12 different wires on top of your tower. One is for the ICO antenna. One is for the RNS button. One is for this. One is for that. It's just Now, to even if you do it as cleanly and as well as possible, to troubleshoot where that short is close to impossible. So.
So even if you're out in an environment where you may be a little bit stressed and you're tired and maybe it's dark or it's raining or it's cold or whatever, you're not in your workshop where you've got a light and a cold one besides you to make it in an easy way.
Or multimeter to check where the thing is from. So, you know, in that way, let's say the redundancy is that the tablet has got a built-in battery. So that battery, even if you lose power, is going to last for a while at least. You know, if the roadbook stops working completely, maybe you've had a crash, which I have to say, from all the roadbooks we've sold, we've never had such a catastrophic crash as to break a roadbook. But let's say it happens. Let's say you ride into a car or a car rides over you. You can still use your phone as a backup for the road book and still finish the race if you able to ride, you know. Whereas people is like, yeah, but you know, with the paper road book, at least I can hold the piece of paper in my hand. It's like, you know, I still want to see somebody ride in rally terrain or in dunes with one hand and checking a piece of paper that's flying all over the place. But
yeah, that's not working.
It's just not going to happen, you know. So another thing is, like, you know, a lot of the times the thumb switches on the roadbooks give in. On a digital roadbook, you can use your finger to swipe. Changes to the roadbook, you know, any rally rider would tell you the bane of their existence is when 11 o'clock at night, the organization comes out and say there's 20 roadbook changes. You've already marked your roadbook and loaded it in your holder. Now you have to take the whole thing out and you have to go and make the changes. With digital roadbooks, that's in real time.
Yeah, so they load it up and you're good to go.
There you go, you know, even the changes. So for me, that's just the roadbook side of it that I discussed now. Sorry, I get really pulled away from it. But, you know,
No problem. I think you could stay on the roadbook side. I mean, I think it's a big part of the future of the sports. Everyone who is a little bit into Dakar stuff. So last Dakar, all the cars and trucks did with digital roadbook, or at least I think every car and truck. And now next year, the motorcycles are either on digital roadbook.
So Dakar has pushed it out again for next year, for 2023, for the bikes, because they can't get the screen to be good enough. So my understanding...
They will race next year with paper.
Still with paper, because they can't get the screen. So Dakar, again, I might be wrong. I don't quite know this, but my sources or my understanding from the ASO is that they will trial run it now, I think, at a later stage in the year. Let's say, for instance, Rally du Maroc or Andalusia in 2023, but not Dakar.
So maybe they should give you a call and talk about
display. No, the ASO only does business with French companies, unfortunately, which I don't think I'm French enough. Look, part of the tablet is that, like, it acts as a roadbook, but what makes it different is that you can also use it as a normal tablet or as a GPS. Then you don't have to buy a Garmin. If you have a cell phone signal, you can even use it as a tracker, you know, as long as you have GPRS signal. So it's literally having a computer on the front of your bike in a 7-inch package. There are a lot of other digital roadbooks out there that are being developed. I've had the privilege of riding with some of them. They are all very, very good devices. The problem that I personally have with them are they are single-use devices. You can use them for a roadbook. And my aim was and still is to say, like, if you are spending money on something, it needs to have more than one use. Because it doesn't help to pay $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 for a something that's just going to sit on my bike and I can only do races with. Yeah. I personally want something I can use for training. I want something I can use for GPS riding. I want something that if I want to make a note or take a photo out in the stage, I can do that. And that was where the idea was born, basically.
I mean, especially that's a very important point if you are not a professional rider, let's say for a factory team, or you do this for a living, then you don't care because you need the roadbook for roadbook riding, and then you got a training bike and you got a spare bike and so on. So you don't have to care about that. But for the normal guys like us who are doing this as a hobby or try to live our passion the best way we could, and we are doing adventure riding and or have maybe also multiple use of our bike because we have just one bike and try to get the best out of it and doing rally and doing adventure and so on. So this multiple use is a real game changer.
And I think for me it excites me because it's, as you've said, it's the crossover between adventure riding and rally riding, and it makes it all of a sudden possible for an adventure rider, even with an 890 or a 990, to go and try some rally, because you can quickly make a roadbook for yourself and learn and try it, you know.
Yeah.
At this last Chrono rally that we had, or not last, the first Chrono rally, you know, we were running digital roadbooks, and I had our specific digital roadbook. And in the GP class, we got position number 3 and position number 6 in the GP class. And in the open or the Rally 1 class, we got position 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
Was all digital roadbooks. So to me, that proves that it can also be used for racing. You know, it's good enough. It's just not a dedicated racing device. But if you get position 3 in a GP class and 2, 3, 4, 5 in a Rally 1 class, to me, that's good enough, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So no more questions to be asked.
Well, and also anybody that is interested, you know, sorry to interrupt you, Chris, but
no problem.
Anybody that's interested can at any time make contact with the people that use it, you know. And I think those people will give them honest feedback. You know, they will. It's better to speak to somebody that has the device than it is to me trying to sell the device.
Yeah, for sure. But that sounds really interesting. And I think we will see what future brings up, and we are sharing ideas and see.
I'm definitely gonna try and send you one to Germany so that you can show it to the people.
I'm really interesting, because for me at the moment, you see, I got this challenge. I'm on the way to prepare the Africa Twin as kind of a training bike for navigation, because we don't have the ability in Germany to ride that much tough off-road legal. So my idea was, okay, the Africa Twin is completely road legal. I can go on gravel roads, which I can drive legally with that bike easily. So I will don't use my race bike for training, and I can make a roadbook and try to navigate around my house, or the place where I live with the Africa Twin. But for racing, I would use my other bike with a rally tower and with the other setup, which is more competitive and more sportive, like the old Africa Twin.
Mm-hmm.
And so now for me, the roadbook thing gives me the ability that I can put this on the Africa Twin, and I don't have to change it. I can put it on the bar with the rem mount stuff or whatever, because it's not that heavy, not that that big like a normal paper roadbook. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to think how can I fit a trip on the Africa Twin so that it's in a good visibility when I ride. So I just put a tablet on it and I go training. And after that, I will take the tablet and put it on my race bike, and I'm good to go racing. And so that's, for me, perfect.
And that's exactly what you've described, is 100% what our vision is. That is that. I mean, I should use you in an advertisement. you should get a TV advert.
I will do it, at least for German market. No worries about that.
Because your vision is exactly what we want to achieve with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that brings us back. Sorry to backtrack, but that brings me back to another thing as to the cost. When we looked at developing the tablet, you know, people forget what a big cost a tower is on their motorcycle, right?
Yeah.
And a tower is only there to support all the navigation equipment because of its weight. So the moment you go digital, you don't need a tower anymore, because you don't have all of that weight on the front end of the bike. And that changes a lot. It changes your riding style. It most importantly changes the cost. And it just makes the sport more accessible.
Yeah. And so even if you take a look you need to buy a good. So if you're doing both, you want to get in ready, and you have an adventure bike, so you need a navigation tool as well. So if you buy a, I don't know, Garmin, whatever, with a bigger display, which is more kind of, aptitude, usability, these things are not cheap either. So you're spending lots of money, and then again, you have a one-way use tool. So maybe it has an emergency call function if you're lucky and if you're going in the high price class, but that's it. So yeah, and you still don't have the ability to use it in this flexible way. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and even getting those tracks off, you know, I sit with it a lot on rallies where I have to get somebody's backup track off their GPS. You know, it's a quite a mission. With the tablet, you know, because the tablet acts as your GPS as well, you record your track while you're riding and you simply just export it with the press of a button. I just click and, you know, I can send it to whoever I want via email and they have the file. So definitely, as far as that is concerned, the tablet removes the need for a Garmin or any other kind of GPS because it performs that function alongside the roadbook as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. I will never forget how many time I spent when I tried to get the record of the track started with one of my normal GPS devices, and it was just getting through some menus and stuff like that, and then I just were thinking, oh, I would just want to hit record and start and go. Really cool. This is really amazing, and I think we will keep track on that, and we will definitely keep you guys updated, or if you have any questions, then let us know, Willem or me, and we will get in touch. At least I will have some more personal questions about your racing. So you got quite some plans for this year.
Yes.
Which things are you being up to, and the people can support you out there, or just keep fingers crossed for your racing.
Well, no, I'd really appreciate that. You know, any support, any help goes a long way. You know, it's amazing sometimes the calls you get from people that follow you or that support you that you're not even aware of. And then, you know, the stories they tell you afterwards is always mind blowing for me. So, no, if anybody wants to follow along, again, our social media, we have the same handle for everything, which is just Willem Avenant Racing. And it's definitely the average Joe riding. You know, it's not somebody that's riding for podium. I like riding because, first off, I get to get around with other riders from all over the world, the melting pot we talked about, but also to experience new places and new styles of racing. You know, I'm in the US right now, and I decided to basically do the US, what I call the US rally season, which is starting in September. And the US rally season for me is kicking off with the COTA rally. A very, very interesting race, whereas it's more a test of bikemanship or motorcycleship than it is about speed. It's up in the mountains in COTA and Utah, and it's a Malamoto rally. For 5 days, you get one trunk, and in that one trunk, you have to fit absolutely everything for the week: your tent, your food, your clothes, your spares. You're only allowed one oil change on the entire rally, so you have you have to really nurse your bike. You're not allowed to use mousses, so you need to be able to change a flat tire. It's crazy. It's a super, super exciting event, and I'm very excited to see how that format's going to go. And then after that, I'm getting into the Baja 6-day rally down in Baja. The guys of Baja has been phenomenal as far as helping me and supporting me getting to the race. Super friendly people, and definitely a race for the books, you know. So I'm very excited for the 6-day Baja. And then after that,
if I may interrupt you quickly here for the Baja thing, I'm sorry. I think a lot of people know the Baja 1000 here in Germany. Maybe they've seen the movies Into the Dust, which I can really recommend. It's amazing. Iron Man class is totally insane, I think. But what is the difference between the Baja 1000 and the Baja 6 days? Maybe you can explain it a little.
So Again, this is my understanding. I'm also fairly new still to the US, but I've been quite involved in the rally scene in this side. So the Baja 1,000, I believe it's 1,000 miles and not 1,000 kilometers, but again, I might be wrong, is a flat-out point-to-point race. And there are several others. There's the Baja 500, the Baja 250. And they're all part of a group of races that is organized by SCORE. And SCORE is the American equivalent to the ASO in Europe. And these races are massive. Now, the thing at Baja is it's not a navigational race. You use a GPS. I know that they have tried this year and last year to bring online a roadbook class. I have not spoken to anybody that's actually competed in it, so I don't know what it is or was like. But you ride on a GPS, and then you basically have points where you, because it's so long and because it's a non-stop race, where you are allowed to switch out riders. So you can enter a team on the Baja 1000, and then at certain transition zones, your friend can jump on the bike and you can rest. You jump in the car, you still race, but at least you're lying in the back of the car to the next point. And then he gets you there and you swap. Now that's the team section. The part of the Baja 1000 that's super interesting, and I think Into the Dust is probably like that, if I remember correctly. That's the Ironman class, where you don't have a teammate and you do it all by yourself. Now, the issue, as with in Dakar and all the other big races in the Baja 1000, is the trucks. So the trucks are the trophy trucks start after the bikes. And once they catch you, you know, the route is so rutted out and it's in such a bad condition that if you be in front of a truck, the chances of you getting out of the way is fairly small. So it becomes a super dangerous race. You know, I'm flat out scared of the Baja 1000. Like, it's not an easy race. Another big difference between the Baja 1000 and, I mean, I haven't even gotten into the 6 days yet, but another big thing between rally and the Baja 1000 is you are allowed to, what they call in America, pre-run the track. Yeah. So they tell people what the loop or the track would be, and then people can go and practice it. Now, that creates obviously all kinds of problems, but number one being that by the time it's race day, the entire track is churned up into ruts, and it's just a completely different track than it was months ago. Whereas on the six-day Baja rally, so it's called the Baja rally because it's in Baja, so it's a six-day. Baja is obviously that peninsula that sticks out in Mexico. So the Baja rally will take place around the areas where the Baja 1000 takes place, in that kind of, let's call it, areas or styles of riding. But it's a full-on navigational rally, which means you have a bivouac, it's 6 days, not just one day, and that you don't know where you're going. You're not allowed to pre-run the route. You get a roadbook in the morning, and then you basically go and you ride that roadbook. So that's the big difference.
I see you also got a marathon stage on day 3 and 4. So it's a full rally setup like we know from to Maroc, from Dakar, from whatever. From
everything.
And then, that's quite nice.
I'm super excited for that. And then a week after that is the Sonora Rally, which is just on the other side of the sea, or the peninsula in this case. It's going to start in MCO this year. And that's also a 5 day, 6 day Dakar qualifying event. As always, it's a great event. It's a great race. I've been involved in it now for 2 years in the organizing side. So this year I'm racing for a change. So I'm very excited to be on the racing side of it for the first time.
I think I've talked to Matthew Clade.
Yep, Matthew from RMS. Yep.
I talked to him about his navigation tower and so on. I think he's quite involved in that too.
Yes, so Matthew has developed the Sonora Rally Tower. That thing is bomb proof. You know, with the exception of the Sonora Rally Tower, I've always been anti-tower because of the weight and because it always breaks. Matthew managed to just, you know, hit the nail on the head and just get it right. The Sonora Rally Tower is exceptional. I was at Sonora the year that he was testing a different tower, not that one. And I remember the tower broke. And I think that was kind of the seed of saying, let me build something that's not going to break, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very, very familiar with the tower, and it's a super, super solid tower. Yeah, definitely.
And he's another good example for the let's say rally family. I was looking around for a tower solution. I still looking around for the right setup for my Beta 390, which I want to go or choose. And he was so open minded and sharing ideas and his knowledge and so that's to get the circle closed. It's really a very, very nice community. To meet people, and he offered help even not knowing me or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, Matthew is an absolute gem to the sport. You know, you can phone him or speak to him at any time. And I mean, we've just had an issue with trip computers, and you know, he's helping the guys out, and he didn't even sell the stuff to them. You know, it's old stuff that's been discontinued, and yet, you know, Matthew is there helping them. So. No, Matthew is a super cool dude. If anybody needs to buy any rally equipment, you know, the shop is called RMS, Rally Motor Shop, and they'll definitely short you out. They're super cool.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely cool shop.
Yeah, so to tie into what the rallies that I'm doing this year in the US for anybody that might be interested next year, you know, I'm doing it with the support or the help of Freedom Rally Racing. And I have to also give them a massive shout out because, again, if it wasn't for Freedom, I wouldn't be doing these races. So Freedom Rally Racing is looking at becoming the premier rally race support provider in America for US rallies. And the idea is that you can come from anywhere in the world, arrive basically a full-on flight and ride package. You know, you arrive at the race, they have a bike for you, you get on the bike, they give you accommodation, they give you food, and you basically just focus on the riding. So
that's
very cool. You know, it's opening up the entire US rally market because they're really setting the bar very high. And we're testing out the system this year, and then from next year it's all systems go. So if anybody wants to ever come and do a US race, you know, make sure to get in touch with me or with Freedom Rally Racing, especially for next year. And yeah, I think the spots will fill up quite quickly. I think we have about 6 bikes, of which one is an RFR. So there's no more excuses not to come to the US to do a race.
The RFR, the holy grail of rally stuff.
Right. Right. The wet dream.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So I think that's so good to hear that there are so many adventures and opportunities to grab. And I think even for me, it's like a little bit of kick in the ass to get this finally started and stop dreaming about, as you said in the beginning, once you're in a point and even you have to start doing it, and then you will grow up from there. So yeah, I think that's very good. So may I ask you if you could choose? I mean, yeah, rally, it's very expensive sports, but it's quite different. So if you do, as an example, the Breslau Rally in Poland, I think it's quite cheap for rally. You can do it with nearly a stock enduro bike, need a little bit of navigation setup and maybe a little bit bigger of tank, and then you're good to go. And you're something about, I think, 1,100 euros for 1 week rally. Racing, so it's quite fair if you compare it to Dakar. So what you need to pay to get in Dakar, or I think even Rally Andalusia or Rally du Maroc, there, or Africa Eco Race, they're at much higher pricing. levels. But if you put this aside, and you could choose, what would be the rally of your dreams? Would it be the Dakar, or would it be the Africa Eco Race? Oh, or
that's a really tough one. You know, I would say obviously Dakar is on my to-do list. I don't know if it's on my to-do list for the right reasons, though. And I think that's one of the biggest things is that for me, the basis of Dakar has been for me that, and that's the Dakar I grew up with, is it has to move boundaries. It needs to go across borders of countries. You know, you need to move, and you need to experience different cultures. So when Dakar actually moved to Saudi, personally, I said to myself that, you know, I don't know how interested I am still in Dakar because of that. And then somebody asked me a question, which is, I still don't have an answer. They said, well, if I give you the money, well, theoretically, they didn't have it. But if I give you the money for Dakar, but I just give you the cash, and I say, here's the cash, will you go and do it? And, you know, I looked at it and I was like, there it is so much money. I could take a group of five friends and I can pay for everything. And we can go on a 1 month or a 3 week motorcycle trip every single year for the next, 5 to 10 years. With friends and make memories. So, you know, it's a very tough choice to me. You said money isn't an option in my choice. So if money isn't an option in my choice, what I would love to see is Dakar starting to go into new countries. And then I'm fully on board. And I still am. I mean, I have to do Dakar. It's not an option because, you know, I can't carry on talking about rally for the rest of my life. I'm not going to do Dakar. At the same time, I feel that Dakar for me is like Everest. There are thousands of very difficult mountains to climb. Everest is just the tallest. And it's definitely not easy. But once you've climbed Everest, you kind of lose the fire to climb the others because you've climbed the biggest one. My stock answer to that question normally is that, you know, Dakar for me is there, it's Everest, it's not going to move, but I want to experience more before I do Dakar. So the question, the answer there then will probably be Africa Eco Race. But because of the fact that it's keeping in touch with the old Dakar roots, and the entire thing it has a different ethos. You know, Dakar is a machine, it's a corporate machine. And of course I want to do Dakar, no question about it. But I would have loved to do the Dakar of old. That's the short
answer. So I think we got the same ideas and same mindset for that. For me, it's also the thing that I miss at the actual Dakar is, like you said, crossing borders, moving boundaries, and all the stuff like that. I've listened to the last press conference from Dakar, where they announced a new route and so. And one thing really makes me a little bit, not worried, but not so happy. They say that the competitors ask for an even harder Dakar, and they have now 15 days of riding than 14 and so. And I was thinking, phew, the last Dakars have been rough, and they've added more technical terrain to ride through and so. And I'm not sure if somebody who's doing Malemoto is really asking for a harder Dakar, because these guys are at their limits for sure, even with a 14 days race. And on the other way, they're talking to make Dakar safer, which is quite good. And so is adding another day. I'm not quite sure. And the thing is, not putting that aside, is that I sometimes got the feeling that we are living in a world where every event has to, has to maximize. And if you got that, the next year edition always has to be more on top and has to be a little thing more and more crazy and more faster and higher and whatever. And often I think the events, they're losing more than they're winning when they try to get even more crazier. And so, you know, I think often it's the right way to keep the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would love to see Dakar to a little bit come back to the old spirits. The race has to develop, you know, with techniques and digital roadbook and become more eco-friendly and trying new techniques and so on. But from the mindset, I would love to see Dakar come a little bit back, like Africa Eco Race to its roots. Yeah,
be more humble.
And
be more accessible to the average guy. I'm totally on board with you, and I think we see it in the same way.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think we're in a position or in a world where, unless you do Dakar, it's very difficult to be taken serious in the rally world, because
it
is the toughest race in the world.
And
we all want to do that thing.
The tick on the bucket list. Yeah. To be honest, Dakar, everyone or nearly everyone knows Dakar. I mean, even somebody who is not in the rally thing at all has literally heard about something like the Dakar Rally.
Famous. Yep.
It's famous, like Baja 1000. Yeah, everyone has heard of, or most people have heard about Baja. But Africa Eco Race or Rally du Maroc, or so this is only known by the people which are really interested in the sport in the game. Dakar is quite a mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll still see you there. one of these days.
That would be awesome. I'm 100% sure that we will make it, that we will get to ride together in the upcoming months or years, for sure. Yeah. And seeing us at Dakar, that would be that would be the Everest.
it's coming. It's not the good thing about Everest is it's not going anywhere. So.
Like Dakar. Perfect. Yeah, Willem, I think we've had a very, very interesting and mind-blowing conversation. So thank you very much for all the detail, all the info. Thank you very much for being here. And I think, we will keep in touch. If you guys out there having any questions, let me know or contact Willem. And check out his Instagram and follow him. And bring out rally in the world.
Thank you so much for you, man. Thank you for creating this opportunity. Thank you for creating the platform where people, off the mic, we were talking about that, you know, there's not even any rallies in Germany. And coming back to the type of people and the spirit, you know, you are living proof of that, because you're saying, like, even though there's not a rally in Germany, I'm going to make a rally podcast in Germany, you know. So that proves it, that proves the point of, you know, this, we will always, the rally people will always find each other. And so thank you for creating this opportunity where we can talk. And I'm really hoping to see you and some of your friends in South Africa soon. And if it's not in South Africa, in America. And if you guys need any help or any assistance, just give me a shout and I'll help you where I can.
Yeah, perfect. So, guys, awesome. Let's make things happen. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day that side.
Yeah, perfect. You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.